to this episode of the Sweep Your Laundry podcast. I'm joined today by the gorgeous Ruth Douglas. She works for a company that is responsible for making all things beautiful. There is nothing more beautiful, I think, and that makes me probably a weirdo, than a nice bed.
everyone deserves a nice bed.
So welcome, Ruth from Heirlooms. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. How are you doing today?
And thank you for inviting me, Charisse. It's it's really exciting to have the opportunity to do this, because of course, hello to all the crew and everyone who's going to watch, because of course a lot of you will know us as a company but not really know the people so much of the faces behind it. So maybe at the end we can have a quick whiz round and you can see we actually make everything here. So I'm looking forward to the next 20 minutes.
20 minutes. We could talk for longer. I know. There's lots to say about a good bed. I am one of those lunatics that I iron all of my bedding. I don't think anybody else deserves to sleep in an iron bed more than me. So I iron all of my sheets. I know friends of mine that have worked on board and they don't iron anything out of principle because they don't want to. But I feel like I deserve it. I'm a bit like the queen. Like, I really want a nice, beautiful press bed.
A bit like that. If he could have his bed linen changed every day, he would. But I think because when I came to Heirlooms 16 years ago, he was only two. And of course, he's had some, you know, I then started taking home some of the linen. And then as a boy, he loved percale. We can go into that, but boys do really love a percale. And now he's nearly 18. He loves the sateen, but he loved the cool crispiness. But actually, he would have his bed changed every day. But as a lot of crew will know, if you have a sateen, very easy to look after, and it doesn't take that much ironing, to be fair. So that's one of the easiest, well, certainly our product. It's pretty easy to look after. I actually don't iron my bed linen. I hang it up on an airing. And by the time I put it on the bed, actually, to be honest, it's all in how
so you're using tricks of the trade. Huh? You're using tricks of the trade to get out of ironing.
And like, we have dressed a lot of boats in our time. Eva, Luke, who a lot of you will know, Eva and I have done a fair few trade shows. We did 11 boats in a day and a half, and those ranged from 3 cabins to 5 cabins, and we dressed them with everything. Duvet covers. We've got really good tricks of the trade to do that very quickly, and we're very particular.
it's really funny, I don't know, there's obviously a stew still in there, but one of the reasons why I liked being a stew on board was the nice things, you know, and linen and understanding, you know, different thread counts and different. I just loved all of it, all of the prettiness and stuff like that. So I'm very excited to talk about what we're going to talk about, which sounds kind of really odd. It's like, who gets excited about linen? Apparently me. But before we get into that, I don't imagine you started with bed sheets, did you? Your journey didn't start with
No, definitely not. Well, as you can tell from the accent, I grew up in Northern Ireland. So I always classify myself as a child of the 70s, because the 70s was when there was a lot of trouble that went on in Northern Ireland. Actually, it was probably because of that I actually went to England to study. I went to an all-girls school in Belfast, by the way, and I'm still, you know, when you look at sort of how you run a business and honesty and integrity and that level of things are hugely important to me as an individual, and therefore that's how we run the company. It was very important to me and my family in terms of, you know, trust in those days. I still see 10 of my girlfriends from school. We regularly go away, and we have been through all sorts of things over time, and it's great to be able to have that bond with people. I went and studied in Newcastle upon Tyne, so still stayed north, and I did a business and marketing degree. And then my father really wanted me to come back to Northern Ireland. So he posted me this brochure about all these opportunities in Northern Ireland. And within it, I found an overseas export marketing program. And having done business and marketing, I thought, great. And off I went to Asia for about 2.5 years. So I went to Bangkok and
What age were you then?
I was in Bangkok 1994, 95. And
So,
so before they ever did the overhead SATs, and I was there on my own, I was 24. Actually, my mother was very ill at the time, but she really wanted me to go and do what I was doing. She knew that I was quite determined to have a career of my own and be independent.
That's quite a time where it was still the white, like, when individuals talk about traveling and everything else, that was back when it was, we're talking about back in the time of the beach kind of thing, like that kind of really
That's right.
rustic kind of travel.
And actually, the beach, I think, was recorded after I had been there because I went to down to Ao Nang, round where the Koh Phi Phi Islands were. And I think maybe the beach actually came out, well, maybe it was recorded, but it actually came out, I think, a bit after.
Well, you would have been there when the obviously went out not long after the book, because the book came out in, I think, it's the early 90s,
Oh,
and then
okay,
the
right.
movie was made afterwards. Obviously,
Right.
any traveler before they go traveling reads the beach, and it's obviously people have said it's not the same anymore. It's been obviously developed, and
Yeah.
obviously especially after the beach as well. So you were definitely a pioneer
Yeah.
traveler
And then I
when
lived
you
in
went.
Singapore for a couple of years. And actually, my job there was to help UK companies develop their export markets. So I ended up covering Asia and the Middle East. So I would be traveling, I mean, topical at the moment with what's going on. But away back 1995, 96, 97, I would be through Dubai every 6 weeks. And actually, there was only one road. And I remember, but interesting. I tell young people, because we do a lot of work with schools, and I say to young people, what is for you will never go by you. I worked for a medical company, Randox, who are very well known now, but they weren't at the time. And one of the girls worked for a linen company. And I was very jealous that she did the linen, because I always thought, although I loved obviously the medical side, my mum was a nurse, and therefore it was a sort of, everyone thought it was a natural thing. I really loved the fact that she did linen. And I remember her actually going to the Jumeirah Beach Hotel at the time, and it being built. And I thought, oh, I would really love to have had that job. Would you know, I met her on a flight a number of years ago, and I went, oh my goodness, Vivian, you'll never guess what I do now. And she was laughing. So what is for you will not go by you.
I
And
think
actually, when I did my university degree, I did two placements. So I worked with Procter and Gamble in customer service. And to be fair, I always had a part-time job, by the way. And because I like dealing with people and also being independent. But I also worked in production for a company called Kimberly-Clark, an American company, who knew that I would actually end up running a manufacturing company and what I learned there. So, no matter what you do over time, I think that you will always, those skills, and you think, why am I doing this job? Or, part-time audio translating, entrepreneurship and that sort of thing, that actually the learning that you, so I don't think any experience is necessarily a wasted experience, even if that experience is not a good experience. I think, and I say to young people now, you will always have challenges in life, so just, embrace them and see them as learning. So yes, so that's but it was all clearly a long time before I actually came to where I am now. The path is never a straight one in life, is it? And
No, it's not.
I actually did work in an entrepreneurship program in the middle of England, but then ended up coming down south and working for a greeting card and gift company, and I ran global sales for them. and helped develop a gift brand. So I was used to working, well, A, globally, but also supporting our partners, and particularly within Europe, to develop their market base. And I still keep in touch with a lot of the people that I worked with over that time.
What's the attraction to you working globally? Like, it sounds like after, you know, doing that first, probably, well, obviously starting with going uni in a different country, but it obviously sounds like you've got the travel bug, you know, like those experiences, those first initial experience really opened a door for you.
Yeah, I think so. And I think I'm always fascinated with understanding other people's cultures, but also looking outside of our normal sort of looking outside. And I think probably growing up in Northern Ireland and all the things that happened around then and during that time. And I suppose a lot of Irish people do a lot of travel, maybe because we're from a smaller island. But it's also being able to, you know, I love spending time with our Italians that we work with. It's just different experiences. And I would say to any young person to take the opportunity to go and travel and maybe work, and obviously with a lot of the crew in the boats, they get that opportunity to go and travel and experience other things. But I think, you know, for me, it's about, you know, being able to work collaboratively with people of all nationalities, all countries, because, you know, we all have a common purpose in terms of doing certain things. You know, for us, it's to manufacture the best product that we can do, and to give everyone a good night's sleep. In my previous one, it was about helping, you know, bring joy to people, actually, because it was greeting cards and gifts, and it's kind of fulfilling that sort of need.
I think it's really interesting, you know, so anybody who's listening to this, that when Ruth says about Northern Ireland in the 70s, there was a lot of trouble that went on in Northern Ireland during that time. Very sad conflict in a way. But it's so amazing that from that kind of conflict and you've kind of gone the other way, like the polar opposite. Yeah. Where Northern Ireland was quite a closing off and dividing, you've literally gone, no, I'm going to do completely the opposite. I'm going to open myself up to everybody and everything. And I think that's quite amazing.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you speak to other people, you know, one of the reasons why we never closed during COVID. So my father, my mum was a nurse, and my father was a detective with the Serious Crime Squad. So during those days of growing up, we were classified as a legitimate target. My siblings, I'm one of four, my siblings went to a local school, but I went to school in Belfast, and my father used to give me a lift in the morning. It got to a point in time where I decided to get the bus instead. But my job in the morning, from, I don't know, 12, 13, was to check the car in the morning for bombs, because my dad was always quite late getting into the car. So I would go out in my school uniform, down on my hands and knees, and look under the car and under the wheel arches. And then we would have sort of driving out, my dad would go, "What's that noise?" And you think, "Oh, okay." So, and I have millions and millions of stories of all sorts of things. But I think, and it's interesting when you then look at sort of people not wanting to do certain things because of fear, and fear start, you know, and actually fear prevents people from doing things. But I think when you have grown up and had to face your fear in a lot of aspects of things, you learn to become more resilient in things. So when COVID happened, who knew? But again, there we go. There's a learning that you didn't know you were going to actually pull on. But actually, we never closed during COVID, for the very reason that, you know, I've had to face my fear before. And I thought, and I weighed up the options and what was happening around us. And I was able to kind of make a calculated risk assessment in you that actually thought, well, actually, no, we don't need to. And actually, we did all the precautions and we made lots of changes and, you know, people went on different shifts. But the impact that it had on our team here was quite significant, because a lot of their family did have to stay at home, and actually at the end when things happened, and it was a challenging time, as it was for many, many people, but they said that they were really pleased and thankful that they were able to come to work. I mean, obviously the office team went at home, although then we started interchanging who wanted to come into the, I mean, it's good when people want to actually come into the office. Yeah, that they were able to kind of come and work and carry on.
It was a really tricky time, but you just, you know, it's like you said, life experiences, you know, basically the flu. Or, you know, it's hardly comparable to checking a car for bombs. Do you know what I mean? So your danger gauge is probably like, you know, I'm gonna have the flu.
I think also that's why, you know, when it comes to international business and looking at things and understanding things, you know, my dad would give me a lift, and I mean, I can talk about this now because my father's dead, so there's no repercussions, because there would have been actually for a very long time repercussions on things, but we're not good on there. But I remember him going into a police station at the bottom of a particular road in Belfast, and going in, and he says, we just have to go and pick somebody up. And the army are in there, and they're doing whatever. And he goes into the building, and then he comes running out, and he goes, we're not picking him up now. We need to go. They're expecting a mortar bomb attack. And I went, okay. And then we go to another police station on another time, and we're picking someone up. And I said, why are we picking them up? And he goes, oh, that person's under threat. And I'm thinking, right. So we're going to pick him up with me in my Victoria uniform, drop me to school. Okay, I think maybe I'll just get the bus, Dad. I now can look back and laugh at it, but at the time I was thinking, sometimes by the time I got to school, I was like, okay, I've had a bit of a stressful morning.
like you said, all of the experiences, you know, at the time.
So running a company is kind of like, well...
So how did you end up at where you are now? How did you end up at Heirlooms? When did
I had met a lady. Actually, it's an interesting story, because I had met a lady that was in recruitment. She had said to, so I'd been talking to her about various things, I was off on maternity, basically, I was sort of looking at different opportunities, and about a year and a half, nearly 2 years after I met her, she phoned me up, and she said, I have found the perfect job for you. And I said, oh, well, I'm doing this, that and the other, but send me the details, and I'll see if I know anyone else that's interested. And when I eventually read the details, I went, oh, okay, sorry, what do they do? And they've got a royal warrant. Well, that's not even on the website. Super yachts. Oh, okay, that sounds interesting. And so then I got in touch with her, and she said, oh, they've already offered someone the job. And I said, all right, okay, so tell me all about the person. And when she told me about the person that was supposed to come and do it, I said, I don't think they're going to last. I said, either they're not going to start the job, or I give them 6 months and then I want you to phone me. And then a while later, the lady phones me, and I, oh, hello, hi. And she goes, how did you know? And I said, what do you mean, how did I know? And she said, she didn't start. And I said, oh, because the thing is, the person wanted more holiday than everyone else and wanted this more than everyone else. And I just kind of felt that they weren't someone that was a, you know, at the end of the day, we're all work as a team. And either you want to do a job or you don't want to do that job. It's not about, you know, the rest of the thing is a little bit immaterial in some respects. But also they needed someone who was really hands on. So interesting. Yeah, well, she didn't start. And then the recruitment process happened again. We still went through the whole process. I have a bit of a bit OCD, so I see things and I pick things up, which is interesting. Anyway, I got the job, and that was 16 years ago this December. And I started as general manager, and then I promoted myself to managing director.
Congratulations. Just for anybody who's listening that doesn't know your company, which obviously it's crazy that they don't, but if they don't know who you are, what is your company? And then explain what a royal warrant is. It's got to.
So heirlooms has been going for over 40 years. So we essentially manufacture bed, table, bathroom linens. We are a creative design company. So rather than just being a manufacturer certainly since I've been here, over the last 16 years, we've really developed into being a creative design company. So we work with interior designers, property developers. Obviously, it's a broad industry. We're doing a lot more in private aviation. We did our first Belmond train last year, which was really super exciting. And really our ethos is, I mean, we don't retail because our job is to support interior designers and to ensure that clients are getting the right quality of fabric, not at a retail price, but actually at a price that is relevant to the quality of the fabric that they get. We source all of our fabric from Italy. We've got really nice partnerships with our Italian weaving mills. And over the time that I've been here, so we had the Queen's warrant. We then applied for the Prince, our now King, but the Prince of Wales warrant. And at that time, Charles, the Prince of Wales, had created a much more robust kind of sustainability reporting for companies. So it wasn't just a matter of tick, tick, tick. It was really, and going back to the whole honesty and integrity, are we doing what we say we're going to do? And no smoke and mirrors. And that is heirlooms as a company. So we took a lot of the learning that they shared as part of our application for the warrants, and shared that with not just our weaving mills, but the companies we work with for towels, where we get our bedding. Right the way through that process, we took elements, okay, what's to do with bedding and the fibres and the dyeing and the feathers and so forth, but also looking at social responsibility for your employees, about carbon footprint. So there's a huge amount, and you only get a royal warrant for 5 years. You have to reapply every 5 years. But really the warrant comes down to then, in terms of, as a company, reliability, service, integrity, and obviously sustainability. And because we've two royal warrants, some people have one, we've two. So we had the royal warrant to Her Late Majesty, and she would choose the colours of the threads. So Balmoral, she would actually choose, I want to have this colour on the napkins for the flowers and that sort of thing. So we had our late Queen, we had the Prince of Wales, and then obviously when our Queen passed, we then applied for the King's warrant, and then after the King's warrant we applied for Queen Camilla's warrant. And actually the palace have been very supportive of us as well. They've been here, they've been to see what we do, so they also know that we manufacture here. And we work with everybody, regardless of whether, you know, you're the King, Queen, or whether you're, making the tea or whatever. Well, I make the tea. but, you know, we treat everybody exactly the same. There is, we have that same level of support with everyone that we work with. And they're really appreciative of that, and therefore really super helpful to us. So now we have both royal warrants. And I know there will be some future royal warrants. But we do a lot of repair of things. So on that sustainability point of view, but also durability of fabric. And that then comes on to sort of having two royal warrants. People look and go, oh, you must be really expensive. And actually, some people still say that and go, oh, heirlooms must be really expensive. Well, it depends on what you want to have. As the crew will know, or any that are watching this, if you've got heirlooms, crew linens, I hope you like them, because actually our 200 thread count, standard percale, is really popular with the crew, and we can do all sorts of things in terms of colours and stuff. And for us, that's a real pleasure. You know, we label stuff, we coordinate the towels, so then there's no arguments as to who's got whose towel, and you know, the top bunk is maybe an inverse to the other, and like, we really enjoy doing that, because you know, at the end of the day, it starts with the crew.
And well, again, making sure the crew are sleeping well is vitally important.
Totally.
And then, and also organizing that amount, you know, there's so much linen on board, like there's tons, literally tons of the stuff. It's one of those things you're like, oh, where's that from? And
yeah,
it's all the touch, you know, obviously inside an interior, it's all about the senses, the touch, the look, you know, it is very sensory driven, and you can
absolutely,
basically working on boats has ruined most of my life after boats, because when you lay out a few things, you're like, oh, that feels good, I reckon that's all right. Oh no, that's really expensive.
Well, to be honest, even we did an event very recently, and we've done a whole load of new pipings, A for crew, so they'll start to see that coming through, but also looking at teens and tweens and, you know, all that sort of thing. And then when I had the pillowcases all made, I was then feeling the fabric and thinking, do you know what? I always forget how good just our standard 200 thread count percale is. You know, bed linen doesn't necessarily have to be expensive. All our ranges of fabric are the best that they can be based on what it is that you want to have. So your 200 thread count is still a really good quality. Well, we would know, because people would come back and say, oh, we didn't like this or didn't like that. We very, very rarely have any issues. Very rarely have any issues. And the odd time when we have done, and actually not the boat laundry, but when an external laundry has managed to kind of, because we get so little of that, we've gone, do you know what? Send it back to us. Don't let them touch it. They're not going to remove this and do this and do whatever, because they have made a mistake. Send it back to us and we'll sort it out. And that's just that extra level of service that we offer to people. But on fabric, so you can go from anything from a 200 thread count percale. You can get 1400 thread count sateen, by the way, but I don't really see why you'd necessarily want to pay for that. And at the end of the day, everyone has a budget. So we always give options. We always say, right, okay, here's our classic plain, brilliant for the charter boats, one of our most popular fabrics. If you want something slightly more for the master cabin, have a 650 thread count. But of course, we knew this because we're doing it all the time. And we always say to the, you know, the crew and or the designers, just come and ask us. We will ask the right questions and say, okay, so, you know, is it family boat? Are the children going to be on it? Is it mainly going to be adult guests? Is it going to be chartered? Do you want separate linens for yourselves and separate linens for charter? Or do you just want separate linens maybe for the master cabin, because it doesn't really matter so much? And maybe you want to have a slightly different thing for the master. And then do you want to have all the cabins in different colours, so then you can coordinate it? Or for ease, do you want them all to be standard and the same colour? So we go through all of that.
What's the advantage of, like, just to be technical, like, what is the advantage of a 1400 thread count?
I mean, it is a really lovely fabric, but it's super expensive. 1400 thread count, so 1000 thread count, and the 14 is made from a Giza Egyptian cotton. And there's only a certain amount of it, a Giza, because it is a particular area of the Nile Delta. You see a lot of, by the way, Egyptian cotton on the high street. I'm not quite sure how they manage that, because there isn't that much. But also, not all Egyptian cotton is good cotton, because there's a lot of contamination. But your 1,000 thread count in your 14 goes through a very specific, it's very specific fiber that is used to create the yarn. And the 1,400, so the thread count is based on per square inch. So if you've got 1,000 thread count, that's a very, very fine yarn used to weave it. Your 1,400 is an even finer one, and it is a bit softer. But our 1,000 thread count feels like silk. And our 650 thread count actually
feels like silk.
Is a lovely fabric. So again, depending on budget, it's
I'd like to lay on it just to find out what it's like. I really would.
Sateen is soft and percale is crisp. Percale, or percale, some people pronounce it, it takes a wee bit more care, but it's percale is cool crisp, and when you wash it, you put it on a low spin, and then you've got fewer creases in it. And you don't really want to tumble dry it either, because the fibres dry very quickly in a percale, whereas a sateen has a mercerisation to it. Your 300s, 400s, the mercerisation is done on the fabric, whereas something like a 1,000 thread count, the mercer and 14, the mercerisation is actually done on the yarn. So it's actually the individual yarn that is mercerised, and then it is woven. And that's soft, and that's very easy to look after and very easy to iron. Even I go outside and iron sometimes when we've got a bit of a push on. I go, I'll do the housewife pillowcases.
The easy ones.
Right, because Trish is a bit of an expert when it comes to folding. I mean, we hand iron everything. It doesn't go through a ruler. So at the end of this, maybe we'll do a quick tour into the workroom and you'll see. We do an alternate shift pattern, so only half of the team are in on a Friday. Every other week our production, our machinists, because there are quite a few of them, they alternate, so they work actually a 4-day week. So every other weekend they get a long weekend. Nice, eh? That was their suggestion, and I said, yeah, if you're happy with that, that's fine.
I have to say, because obviously I have come to see you, because we literally live next door to each other. So when we were talking, I think we were abroad actually, when we were talking, I'm like, oh my God, you're actually down the road.
Yes, yes, Monaco. Yeah.
So like, so to have a wander around, like, so for listeners, if you are the chief, you know, the stews that do like the fancy bits, you know, like my time on board, I loved just, you know, touching, you know, the fabrics that, you know, in my normal life, I wouldn't be exposed to in any way. So I just, you know, was obsessed with crystal materials and, you know, how was that made? And, you know, getting into looking after some of the finer things in the world. And the stories behind, you know, how things are made, it blows my mind. It's so fascinating. And a lot of it is ancient as well. Some of the best things that humans produce have stood the test of time. You know, like you said, Egypt's been making sheets for a very long time. It still also seems like they still make some of the most luxurious sheets.
Well, it's the yarn that comes from that. Yeah, absolutely. And I think
that would have been thousands and thousands of years of product development.
And we work with our Italian weaving mills, you know, we spend a lot of time talking to them about product development and looking at new ranges. We've got some new fabrics coming out very shortly, which is going to be really interesting. We're doing a launch, World Sleep Day, for Micromodal. But Micromodal is the equivalent to silk, by the way. And there are going to be some Micromodal merges, combinations with other yarns. So that's all going to be coming out. So it's really nice to be able to work with them, and, you know, they understand they love what we do as a company, and even as an Italian company that supply a lot of other companies with fabric, they do say how unique Heirlooms are as a creative design company. And that's really, really nice to hear from them. They're visiting us next week again, but it's I think that it's just that joy of ensuring that the not just the fabric is a really good quality, but how we cut and make it reflects just, yeah, everything about who Heirlooms are as a company.
With obviously, you know, you do the Royals, obviously you do interior design on land. What is different about what, you know, the arm of your business that has to deal with the yachty world? You know, obviously you weren't exposed to yachties, the yachty world, before you joined. What, you know, what were your first impressions and what have you really enjoyed kind of expanding into when it comes to the yachty world?
Ensuring that we deliver the right quality of product. I mean, something, you know, and also being able to deliver what it is that they need. In terms of a fabric, is also then looking at sort of, you know, the environment and making sure that the materials that we provide them are the right for on board. And when they ask for other products, making sure that the materials that we use for certain things are durable. And I think, you know, it's such a tough job for the crew working on board that actually our job really is very much to make our part of it very easy for them. We see ourselves as an extension of their team. And, you know, somebody will go on board a new boat, a boat's been sold, or new chief stew will take over. And they maybe go, oh, we need to change all the linen, or we need to have replenishments for the linens. And maybe they think, oh my gosh, we don't know where to start. And we go, yeah, don't worry about it. We've got everything here. So then we send them previous packing lists. I mean, for one of the boats we look after, I merged together all the historical orders that they'd ever had with us, put it on a spreadsheet by cabin, because that's how we do it, and sent it across and say, just tick what it is that you need. Here it is by cabin, check that you've got whatever, and then tick what it is that you need, and then we'll replicate that. And if towels slightly change, I mean, to be honest, we manage to keep things consistent, but if something were to change, like towels are different, we will find, it's our job to find what replaces that. And they're also running budgets, so, you know, replenishments are a huge part of our business, but it also means that it's very cost effective. And, you know, a boat, they don't really need more than three, well, it depends on how heavily chartered they are, but I think also we say to them, look, our job is not to sell you as much as we can. Our job is to sell you what you need. And then if you find that you need more, you come back. We're not going anywhere, yeah? You just say, mm. Oh, okay, I want to have this, I want to have that, I want to have something else. So that's what we do. And the whole service side as well, when you're looking at table linens, and if they want to do themed nights, you know, we then say, okay, well, you know, we can do it. We've got embroidery machines here. So
I know.
I've seen them.
So we can do anything. Incredible bits of kit. They are in, like, huge embroidery machines. You know, this is not just like putting a couple of initials or like a nice flower. These things are huge. They are massive. But it's incredible what you can produce now.
And they were designed very specifically for us. And the density of the thread and how the machines operate was created for us to ensure that durability. So definitely, you know, house environment is quite different. The crew, you know, on board, as you well know, it's having, you know, the right product, the durability, and being able to have that service. Because also, if you're somewhere in the Caribbean or blah 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 blah, and I don't know, something gets damaged or something is torn or whatever. I mean, we had one year the Maltese Falcon, I think, was taking part in some in one of the races, and I don't know, the laundry had lost something, and they suddenly needed, you know, whatever sheets ASAP, and we basically, yeah, raised it, sent it across to, because we have another building with the cutting, asked the guys, and we got it cut and done and sent out. I said, right, okay, what's your next protocol? We'll send it to there. And the whole, just touching on the Brexit thing, by the way, in terms of supporting, because actually it was interesting. I think there was a bit of a, like with all things, we changed our systems very quickly, by the way. As we do, because just because something's happened doesn't mean we go, oh, we were already ready for that. And we ship globally anyway. So we had all commodity codes and all of that. And it was interesting where I think, you know, some clients sort of maybe look, where else could they go? But actually, it also is testament to Heirloom's quality of customer service and how we look after people. That actually they came back because then they realised actually, you know, you've got two options. Basically, if you're a VAT registered boat, we'll send it and then you can claim back the VAT in Europe because we ship without VAT. If you're not a VAT registered boat, then we can send it delivered duty paid. So we will add on that as a cost because you've got to pay VAT somewhere, I'm afraid, unless you're registered for VAT. And we send it out and we do it that way. So actually it's really, you know, it's like all things, you know, governments put things as barriers to the rest of us.
Yeah.
The rest of us just have to go, wait a little minute, we're just going to do this and then everything will be fine. Because at the end of the day, you know, people want to work with companies that they can rely on and can get service from. And we make sure that we're able to deliver that anywhere in the world.
I mean, that is an achievement in itself. So obviously this year just gone, I did the crew welfare bags for the Monaco Yacht Show.
Yes.
So if anybody knows, so the crew welfare bags, we give them out. They're free bags for crew and they're just full of like really cool goodies and everything else. So that was really my first experience of trying to ship in to France. Although the items that were being put into the bag weren't mine, what a faff. Oh, honest to God, there is an expertise in trying to logistically get anything through Europe. And I don't think it's just the Brexit thing. I think it all just seems that it's gotten really complicated.
But it's interesting even within Europe, because even within shipping within Europe has actually become complicated. I don't know, like all things, things will all come back full circle. I know that full well, because given where we're currently at with global situation, things will come back full circle. But I think that's where we as a company sort of go, okay, you know, we just... understand what the challenges are, make sure that we are prepared to be able to deal with them. I mean, at one point, even within Europe, things like feather and down, they wouldn't, and it was to do with, I'm trying to think now, I think it was either to do with Spanish or one of the countries, it was to do with the filling, and it was to do with feathers, that you couldn't even ship within Europe certain things. Whereas we got certifications, we actually don't use that much feather in any of what we kind of recommend. We've got like a European white goose down, fabulous product, or we do something that's tensile fibre. And loads of other different options. But you know, we learn things and then go, okay, so this is what we're going to do.
Well, I think, you know, that's probably to set you up from others. You know, it's honestly that really opened my eyes last year of the and also the excuses and stuff like that. Like, it's, you know, it's, you know, especially delivery companies, it's your job. You're being paid to deliver, you know.
That's quite interesting.
You don't get paid unless you deliver.
And there are certain countries in the early days where I phoned the customs and said, I think you'll find what needs to be charged as XYZ. So I phoned on behalf when one of the boats, I said, send me a copy of the invoice. I mean, that's all part and parcel of us looking after people. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Send me a copy of the invoice. Yeah, that doesn't look right. So then I had a little look up. So then I actually phoned the local customs office and had a word. And said, I think you'll find you want to be charging XYZ. And we had some emails backwards and forwards. And then when I actually said, I think you'll also find if you want to do this, it's not maybe legally quite correct. Anyway, that got solved.
It is, you know, like not only, you know, producing a really nice product, but like the main part, I suppose, different, you know, when you're dealing with, you know, clientele that are, you know, on land, the logistics of trying to get to where a boat is probably nearly half the job, you know, because there's no point in creating something nice if you can't get it to them. But yeah, my eyes were open last year, massively. I can't wait for this Monica.
Well, to be fair, we don't have to. Yeah, we don't. So, well, maybe if you want us to send it, because actually we find we don't have too many problems, actually. But then, you know, we choose who we ship with. And then we also use a specialist company to send large shipments on our behalf, and they'll take care of all the paperwork.
And that's I will definitely be tapping into your incredible knowledge this time around. It was stressful, you know, it was a stressful thing. With heirlooms, you seem to like really tap into education, and I think that's really important. Like I said, you know, not everybody's kind of probably naturally interested in a lot of the stuff that I'm interested in. You know, I'm just naturally kind of curious about how things are made and stuff like that. But it does sound like you make that as a priority to kind of educate, not only when it comes to delivery and organisation, but education on fabrics and stuff like that. And obviously, we all know that there isn't actually necessarily any formal training for interior crew when it comes to fabrics and stuff like that. So would you say education? I know you do a lot of stuff shoreside with educating young people as well. It's quite an important part of what you do.
Yeah, I mean, textiles is actually one of the curriculum options now in schools in the UK, in the curricula. So we work with a number of the local schools. So we work with there's about three or four local schools, and we offer a week's placement. So I think we're quite coveted now in terms of who's going to go to heirlooms, because their job for a week is not to photocopy and do filing, because how boring would that be? And I think a few companies have done that. And we certainly don't use it as somebody to do the menial job that nobody else wants to do. We put a lot of work and effort into students coming and spending a week's placement with us. And our work experience. And when they're in the doing textiles, they obviously have to create coursework now. So we help them with that coursework. So when they come here, quite often we'll ask them to design something for Monaco and for September. Or we also got one of the girls to do This Girl Can. So it was for International Women's Day. We got her to create a campaign with us. But they spend time with Nicola in creative design. They look at they see the back office side in terms of materials planning, costing, doing all of that. They go over to the guys with their order that they have designed and put onto the system, and they'll cut it and they'll make it and they'll do all of that and embroider. We take them up to London. We go to Chelsea Design Centre, because there are loads of fabric companies there. So it's not just about whether or not you want to work for a company that manufacture bed, table and bathroom linens. You might want to go into other sort of, you know, performance fabrics. Or one chap wanted to be a fashion designer. And being a Royal Warrant Holding company, I phoned up number one Savile Row, Gives and Hawks. They have an amazing shop there, but their atelier is downstairs. And they were fantastic with us and took them all around, and he was able to see all of that. And, you know, it's such a great thing to be able to encourage and give students the opportunity of being able to see where, because it's difficult as young people to think, what am I going to do? But also open their eyes to the industry in general, in terms of, you know, we do our part. But when you look at actually building a boat and the engineering and doing, you know, all the aspects involved in it, as we all know, it's an incredible industry. We support UKSA, so you obviously you've got training, and they have got some of our product that we donated to UKSA to use as part of their training. We've got a whole host of information we share with crew in terms of fabrics, but you know, our job is to give advice, and you know, we send samples all the time to people. And then yesterday I spent the morning with one of the schools doing mock interviews. So how to do an interview if you want to go for a job. Bless them, some of them were really nervous, and one girl really didn't want to do it. So I went and sat with her and had a wee chat. and then said, right, we've already done half the interview now. Do you want to come and sit at the desk and we'll do the rest of it? But it's also, you know, for me, that day was just about getting them out of their shell and to give them confidence that actually, you know, no one knows, you know, at that age, it's a difficult age. And I said, none of us know what we're doing anyway.
Well, and also going back to what you said at the beginning, you know, you don't know where it will lead. So, you know, how many ex-crew members that I've spoken to became obsessed with linens and textiles and everything else. And when they've stepped off the boat, that knowledge of knowing these different materials, manufacturing processes helps them then potentially get a job outside. You know, yeah. It's not wasted time. Well, that's what I tell myself, although I haven't got a job in creating anything. I was just obsessed anyway. But, you know, you just don't know where it's going to end up. I think one of the sad things about this country, we were, you know, from, you know, tartans in the north and fantastic wool, like where I'm actually originally from, you know, the football town's called the Cobblers. We used to make shoes, like factories, huge factories making shoes to be sent all the way around the world and different like locations, experts in, you know, creating textiles and stuff like that. We were a massive producer for a very, very long time. So it's really lovely to know that like entities like yourself are like still going, embracing what, you know, what was here. And then obviously tapping into it. They're obviously, there are great companies in on the island still, but they're just tucked away. They might be smaller.
It's interesting that you said that because when you look at the companies that are part of the Royal Warrantologists Association, there are a significant number of small manufacturing companies that do all sorts of different products. And Quest, which is the Queen Elizabeth Scholarship Trust, I know that Winch Design and Andrew Winch himself is very supportive of Quest. We have known Quest for such a long time. Deborah Pocock is the CEO because of our royal warrants. And we've always been a supporter of Quest. And Quest is about scholarships. It's about helping people to develop those craft skills. And I think craft is definitely coming back and manufacturing is definitely coming back. I mean, there is a huge sense of pride to be able to walk out of the office, you know, for us to aid creating a completely new design for somebody and being able to walk out into the workroom and see it actually taking shape and see it being made.
It's quite incredible.
Very special about running a manufacturing company, about creating a product, and I think we are seeing a lot more manufacturing coming back and being promoted.
I mean, it's one of those things, you know, because culture is a big conversation at the moment. What is, you know, the culture of the UK? And I think so much of it actually came from manufacturing. So much, you know, language that was used, you know, like I said, the name of a local football team is what was made in that area. You know, it's really tapping into heritage. And I think a lot of people are looking at that. But the trades are just, you know, creating beautiful, amazing things. And I know we've just gone through a phase where volume, cheaper, trying to make things more accessible to more people has its value, don't get me wrong, but also I do think going back to, you know, we all know now that fast fashion is probably not the best idea in the world. You know, and the same with, you know, linens and stuff like that. Would you rather have three sets of linen that last, you know, literally a lifetime? You know, my grandparents' jackets, they bought them, they would have been the equivalent of buying a 500 quid jacket, but it lasted your entire life, you know? So I think there is, with the, you know, with, like you're saying, like King Charles Beer, he's very keen on sustainability and stuff like that, which, you know, let's hope it just continues, because in that sustainability, we now look back and go, well, actually, the old way that we were doing was really sustainable.
I have a real thing about wastage in anything, and we definitely don't waste fabric here. And in actual fact, for good to know and good anyone who's watching, we have second chance linens. So if there's an imperfection in something, then we will mend it, but we'll put it to one side, and we sell that off to just, people that we, meet through our industry. We go, look, if you're looking for linens for yourself, get in touch. We'll see what we've got.
So sustainability for your company is obviously very, very important. What are, like, obviously, just to finish up, what going from sustainability, like, what are you projecting in the future? Like, what projects have you got that you're looking forward to?
Ooh, lots of projects actually that we've got in the pipeline, which is always really exciting. Again, we look at a project and think, oh my gosh, we really want to do that project. And that's actually not, it's not about selling product. It's not about, it's about that project really deserves to have the best linen on board. And we look at buildings as well and think, oh my gosh, I mean, we did 20 Grosvenor Square, really historic building in London. And you look at it and you think, actually, that just deserves to have heirlooms linens. And when we're working with the design houses for the boats and residents, just being able to support them and work with them as a team. We're very fortunate that we have, a lot of projects, and they put a lot of trust in us. But then, we're a company of honesty and integrity. We didn't know that quiet luxury was going to be a new thing, because we've been doing quiet luxury for the entire duration of heirlooms history. And quiet luxury is about sustainability and quality. But luxury is not about being expensive. And it worries me that people, if we say we're a luxury company, people automatically think that's expensive. No, it's not about being expensive. It's about giving the right product to the right person within the budget that they want to have. And sustainable, we don't waste anything. I have a real thing about wastage, food, fabric, whatever. We don't waste anything. How we cut things, how we manage, and any imperfections on things, we will maybe, or that there's a detail that's we're not going to send out. We've then got second chance linens, so that's becoming quite popular. We were going to set up a separate website, but I think anyone can just get in touch and go, my bed is XYZ size, and we'll go, oh, this is what we've got. What would you like?
Yeah.
So, and it's nice to be able to do that. It's just utilizing the fabric in the best way possible, that people can have that little touch of luxury in there. Everyone deserves good bed linen. Sleep
They
is
do.
very
They do.
important. Sleep is very important, and everyone
They
deserves to
do.
have good bed linen.
I firmly agree. Like I said, I'm a lunatic that irons my bed. I do like a nice, although I am obsessed with white linen. Like I don't go for patterns or anything like that. It's just, I am a traditional white linen, but I haven't got any sateen, so I might have to
Oh my
add to my
gosh, you
collection.
definitely need, yeah.
I
Start
need
with a
to
pink gate.
maybe add to my collection.
We
But
have
we're
no
on.
minimum order quantities, so you can have exactly what you like. We've never had a minimum order quantity because the whole point is you order what you need. Yeah.
Well, technically, I don't need any linen,
Well,
but I might
you need to fit a cheat at some point. That's the thing that gets worn the most.
anyway. True, true. Well, I won't tell my husband that. Just to finish off, it's been lovely to have you on and hearing about what you're doing. What's on the horizon for heirlooms? So if anybody wants to kind of get in contact with you, which events are you going to? Because I know you're quite active this year. I know you're generally at Metz for sure. You're
We do
always at
Mets.
Met.
We'd already, because we're doing a UK roadshow, we're not going to quite as many sort of overseas shows this year because, well, we have a budget to manage as well for marketing. But always happy to pop out, by the way, to location if a boat wants us to come out. We're always at Monaco, so most people know to find us in the Parvis Piscine. This will be our 23rd year or something at Monaco. And actually, we continue to do that because a lot of people drop by and see us just for a catch up. And sit down. We always have water, and we normally have something more
You and
exciting by the
you're
end
and
of
you're always
the day.
you're always inside, so if you need to get cool off a little bit, it's quite nice.
That's why we're there.
I might have to up the ante with the crew welfare bags and maybe get you to do a proper design. We might have to
Oh
do
yeah, no,
a
definitely.
collab
Yeah,
and create the bag this time.
Oh yeah, no,
That would
we
be
could do.
really
And then
nice.
yes, we will be doing Met's. We're going to go to the Antigua Charter Show this year, so we've just been booking that, and then we'll be back on the sort of regular circuit of things. But anyone can just drop us an email. I mean, my email, ruth@heirlooms-linens.com. Eva@heirlooms-linens.com. And yeah, just drop our phone us. Look, our job is to help, and even if it's just a question about something that's not necessarily our, we always know who to recommend or who to send someone to. Our job is to help as much as we can, work as part of the team.
Well, it's been amazing talking to you. See, I told you we'd have loads to talk about. When I asked you to be on the podcast, you're like, what are we going to talk about? Like, really important things. Really important things to me. But it's been fabulous to have you on. And to anybody who's listening at the moment, when Ruth says contact me, she really does mean that. And they are lovely ladies and they will help you out. And definitely, if you're at the Monaco Yacht Show, go by the stand. This stuff's just beautiful. It's just beautiful, it's just pretty, and they're lovely. So thank you very, very much for being part of the show today.
Thank you, Charisse. It's been a pleasure. And I'll do a little video, because I'm sure most people think, oh, so I will do a little quick whiz around the workroom, and you'll be able to see what we do here and how we actually make it.
That would literally be amazing. So on the end of this, we will tag Ruth's video so you can actually see it, because it is fascinating. You know, like I said, the embroidery machines. The only thing we can't do, unfortunately, is because you want to touch the fabric on the other side of the screen, but you can't. But it's super interesting. And it's been really lovely talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on. Dear listeners, if you've enjoyed this episode, there are plenty more on anywhere you get your normal podcast recordings. We've got more in the pipeline. But until the next time, take care and maybe go and read about some fabric. Until next time, bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Heirlooms are the world's leading manufacturer of bed, table, and bathroom linens. Hello, my name's Ruth Douglas. I'm Heirlooms Managing Director. I also have the huge honour and privilege to be the grantee for our royal warrants. We have the royal warrant to Her Late Majesty the Queen, and to our now King Charles III. So it's a delight. Everyone at Heirlooms absolutely loves what they do, and it's a huge honor and privilege for me to lead such a talented team.
My name's Kevin. I'm the head cutter of Heirlooms, to organize all the orders, try and group all the orders together to make sure they leave on time. It's always different. We're so bespoke, so it's bespoke to the customer, it's made to order. The people, fantastic. You feel like you're a big part of the family.
You know, it's quite hard to describe us as Heirlooms in one word, because it's so much what you can describe us as. But I think wholehearted, because there is a lot of pride in the company here, and you can feel it in our linens as well. Favorite part of my job is being here and seeing what we always were dreaming about Heirlooms becoming. It's actually coming true. Oh, you made me emotional now. See, there is a heart in it, isn't it? Thank you. Oh, I was fantastic. Thank you. That was quick. Wow.
My name is Agi. I am sewing machinist on that company from about 12 years. It's really good manufacturer, actually, for working moms like I am now. And yeah, very friendly and helpful. Every day we have different things, and yeah, it's nice.
As we look to the future and how we think
think Heirlooms is going to evolve, we will always stay true to our original ethos and our core values. I think what makes it so exciting to be a part of Heirlooms is how not just us as a company, but the whole industry embraces these sustainable practices and how we can be part of a motion going forward to help our planet.
My name is Saif. I work in an embroidery department. My responsibility is high quality. This is machine, we have got only one in the UK. It has like a special size, 60 by 120. Because we're busy now, and then we're gonna buy another one the same size. Every day I come here as like different things and different design and enjoy with team.
I'm Tisha Fernandez, and I'm in charge of quality control. I love working for Heirlooms. It's like we are a family. I don't know about them, but for me, everybody's a friend.
Collaborations start within a team. Our team have developed immensely, and that collaboration is reflected in how we work with our clients. I don't think there's one word that can truly sum up Heirlooms as a company, but if I had to choose one, it would be exceptional. We have exceptional fabrics, we have an exceptional team, we have exceptional clients, we're exceptionally positive, so I think exceptional sums us up. In Heirlooms' world, everyone deserves good bed linen.